a morning. It did. Today's daf and Shabbos Kuf Bay. When the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Bay is an Aleph, we are this morning going to be finishing up the 11th parak of the Masechta and midway on the Amud Beis. Not midway, but midway through our daf today at the top of Amud Beis, we're going to be starting the 12th parak of the Masechas. We are finishing the Malach of Hotzah today, which is some accomplishment to say the least, because the Malach of Hotzah has preoccupied us for the last number of parakim at the end of the 7th parak. And that takes us all the way back to Daf Ayin Hey Amud Beis. So we started with the Malach of Hotzah, and through the end of the 7th parak, 8th parak, 9th parak, 10th parak, and now the 11th parak, we have been preoccupied with the Malach of Hotzah. So in terms of prakim, that is ninth parak. It's a little bit funny because most of it had was unrelated topics, just simply fit in here into this Masechta. But that would be prakim is number 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Approximately 5 prakim dedicated to the Malach of Hotzah. And that goes with, and that's aside from the first sugya of our Masechta, Daf Beis Amud Aleph, through Daf Tes. Another foray into the discussion of the Malach of Hotzah. So that is 5 prakim plus one other Mishnah. In terms of dapim, it is approximately 25 blot of Gemara dedicated to the topic of Hotzah. So as we already pointed out at the beginning of the Masechta, this is going to be one of the longest discussions. And today we'll conclude formally the end of the Gemara's discussion regarding the Malach of Hotzah as we conclude the 11th parak. And then, as we open up with the 12th parak of the Masechta this morning, we're going to be discussing the Malacha of Bona, Binyan, and Makeh B'Patish that's coming up a little bit later on this morning. We begin with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah over here is going to be giving us a basic principle. Let's read the Mishnah. Azorik v'nizkar me'achar she'yaseh miyado. A person throws an item, and after he remembers the item, he remembers now that it's Shabbos. So that means to say that when he threw, when it left its hand, so it is, the person was in a state of being a shogeg, having forgotten about the fact that today was Shabbos, or the fact that it was usher to throw it. And then midway through, he remembered. And so now, as we are halfway through the act, he's no longer a shogeg because now he remembers the Shabbos. Now, kalta achir, kalta kelev. And it was caught by somebody else, it was caught by his dog, Osha Nisrafa, or it was burnt. Now, the way we're going to read the Mishnah at this point in time is that we are thinking that this is all one long, intricate case. And there are many details involved in this case. So, we open up with him throwing the item while being in a state of shogeg. Halfway through, he remembered that it's Shabbos. Then it was caught by somebody else, or it was caught by a dog, or it was burnt. So, it never even arrived at its destination, or at his intended destination, Pater. In this scenario, it's going to be Pater. Now, there are a lot of factors going on in this Mishnah, and when we get to the Gemara, we're going to try to dissect the Mishnah and figure out which is, of the factors, which one is the most influential. And in fact, we're going to also see in the Mishnah whether or not I read the Mishnah correctly, because the Gemara itself wonders, why is the Mishnah giving a case that has so many factors involved in it? Zarek lasos chabur. Now, let's say I throw an item B, not so that it would go more than 4 amos in a Rishus HaRabim, not to transfer from A, Rishus Yachid to Rishus HaRabim, but I'm throwing it just simply because I want to cause harm to somebody, specifically a wound. So I'm throwing it with the intention of making a wound, Bein Ba'adam, Bein Be'behema, whether I'm looking to inflict a wound on a person or on an animal, V'niskar, and then after doing that, he remembers, Achelo Nasas Chabur, before the Chabur was actually made. Pater in this circumstance is going to be exempt, meaning he's not going to be chayv karban chata, zehaklal. And now the Mishnah goes over with us what is the basic rule, which is kol chayv chataos ein chayavim ashe tikalasa v'selfam shkaga, that in order to be subject, eligible to be bringing the karban chatas, you have to be in a state of shogeg during the entirety of the malacha. From the beginning of the malacha to the end of the malacha, you have to be in a state of shogeg. And the Mishnah over here spells out, Chalasan Shigra Vesofa Zadon. If you start off as being a Shogig, but then you ended up being a Mezid. And Chalasan Zadon Vesofa Shigra. Or let's say you started the Malacha while being a Mezid, and you ended up by being a Shogig, Piturim. You'll be exempt ad, Shitei Tchilasim V'Sofam Shigiga. Until the beginning and the end of the Malacha is performed while in a state of being a Shogeg. So over here, the Mishnah is introducing us really to a most basic rule regarding eligibility to bring a Karban Chatas. And that is that in order to qualify as a Shogeg, you must be in a state of Shogeg, in a state of Halama, from the beginning of the Malacha to the end of the Malacha. And just because you were in a state of Shogeg for part of the Malacha is insufficient to bring a Karban Chatas. Now, just for a moment, if we could think about this, what does that mean to say? It means to say that what you did was somewhat less severe. That's obviously not true. Because let's go to some of the examples that we just gave in the Mishnah. Let's say that you threw it in a state of Shogeg, and then midway through you remember that it's Shabbos. So now what really this is a combination of being a Shogeg and being a Mazid. So if anything, it's not that your lack of eligibility to bring Karban Chatas is not predicated on the fact that now the act that you did is less severe. In fact, just the opposite. It's more severe. It just happens to be that this is the rule of eligibility for a Karban Chatas, that you have to be in a state of Shogeg from the beginning to the end. And the examples that are given in the Mishnah are not because we're treating these cases any less severe than a full Shogeg. It just happens to be that these are the qualifications to bring a Karban Chatas. Okay, and with all that stated now, so the rule of the Mishnah is very clear. The case of the Mishnah, specifically, the first case of the Mishnah, is not very clear. And this is now what the Gemara is going to try to tackle in our first sugya, and that is, what exactly is going on in the first case of the Mishnah? Now, in the Mishnah, let's go over the steps that were involved. You threw it while having forgotten that it was Shabbos. After it left your hand, you remembered it's Shabbos. Then it was caught. And it was caught by either another person. And when we say caught over here, really what we mean is intercepted. Meaning that wasn't really your intention. It was caught by another person, caught by a dog, or it incinerated before it landed. So the Mishnah says in that case, in that very long case, you're going to be putter. Now, let's go over what would be the implication if we're reading the Mishnah correctly. And that's what the Gemara starts off with. Hanacha chayev. So the Gemara says, now that means to say that if I were to remove, let's say, for example, the last factor, and that is that it was intercepted by somebody else or by a dog. Let's say I take that out of the equation. And let's say now it just simply landed. So by implication, what the Mishnah would therefore imply is that you would be chayav. But the Gemara says, but of course that makes no sense. Vitznan, v'haloniskar. The Gemara immediately jumps on that implication. You didn't, halfway through, you remembered it was Shabbos. Utnan in the Mishnah itself, meaning we don't have to go to another Mishnah. We could stay right here on this Mishnah. Then in order to qualify, in order to be eligible to bring a Karban Chatas, you must be a Shogeg from beginning to end. So even if, let's say, the dog didn't catch it, or another person didn't catch it, and let's say it landed on the ground, the implication of the Mishnah is you're going to be Chayav, but you're not going to be Chayav because you weren't a Shogeg from beginning to end. So the Gemara now is going to give a number of attempts of how to explain the Mishnah. Right now we're thinking that we're reading the Mishnah correctly. It's just maybe there's a certain circumstance in the Mishnah that we're not totally following. So Amar Rav Kahana Seifa Asan Lelichta Umastam. So Rav Kahana says that the Mishnah is describing a scenario where what you're throwing is a lechet. Lechet is a wooden hook. Right? Rashi goes through a lot of detail over here in terms of describing this wooden hook. But anyway, it's a wooden hook, and it's on a string. And so what you're doing now is that you're throwing something that is still attached to your hand, like a kite. And it's, the item is not a kite, but in other words, it's still tied to your hand. And so therefore, when you're throwing the item is not left you. Well, the item itself has, but the fact that the string is still connected to you, so that means to say that you could pull it back. So the Gemara says, Lech lo mesta hok debiyadahu. So the Gemara says, okay, but it's still attached to you, meaning it's still connected to you. And the Gemara says, this is not a zrika. A zrika is when you throw an item and it's totally being released from you, and over here it's not. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. That doesn't really fit into what the Mishnah is saying. But before we get to the Gemara's answer, how did this help us? Meaning the fact that now we gave a scenario in which it was a hook tied to a string, how did the Gemara think now that this would be of an assistance? So you take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi divra maschul misna. Klamar, Rashi writes, "Lo mituk masefa ela bezorik lichta hakashur bechevel katan kedarka va'oches hachevel biyado ve'ukishenizkar hayabad biyado la'echos." So the Mishnah scenario is which you're throwing an item, but because it's still because the string is still being held in your hand, so hachevel ula'ake zrikas halachta shelo tanu achilchach tchilas v'shogig v'sofa mezid upater. The reason why there would have been an exemption is because when you threw the item was still attached to you. It was still being held in your hand. Now, if the case would have been a case in which when you threw the item, it was totally released from you and you no longer were holding on to it, neither it nor a string attached to it, so then you would be chayev. So again, what the Gemara now is suggesting is that the reason why you would be putter in the Mishnah is because it's a item that's still being held onto a string, and that's why you would be putter. But the objection to it now, of course, is the fact that, yeah, but that's not zrika. Meaning the case of the Mishnah is zrika, and zrika by definition is where you threw an item and it is not connected to you at all. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to abandon this approach and we're going to go with a different approach. So the Gemara says, Kigoshi niskam lasos chabura. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the first case in the Mishnah is talking about a case where your intention was to make a chabura. So the Gemara says, Hanami Tanina. The Gemara says, wait, 1 second. That's in the Mishnah itself. Hazark lasos chabur, beba adam beba hima, beniska shalon asos chabur putter. Meaning, how can you explain the first case of the Mishnah as a case in where you're intending to make a chabura, when meanwhile, that's the very next case in the Mishnah? So that can't be the definition of the first case of the Mishnah. So Elam Arava. So the Gemara says, okay. So here's what we're going to suggest, and that is bima'avir. Maybe the case in the Mishnah is talking about not where you threw the item, but rather what you did is you walked the item 4 amos. And in doing so, the zeha klal, the general rule of the Mishnah, is only talking about a scenario where I walked an item 4 amos in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, not when I threw an item in 4 amos. And so maybe we can make such a distinction. So the Gemara says, but wait 1 second, but that's very difficult. V'hazah klal diktani azrika ketani. That's very difficult. Let's go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah opened up with a case of throwing. The Mishnah then talked about a case where I was throwing it, and it was caught by a person or by a dog, or incinerated in the air. The Mishnah then talked about a case of throwing it in order to create a chabura, and the Mishnah gives us the general rule that in order to qualify for a karban chatas, you have to be a shogeg from the beginning to the end. You want to tell me that the Mishnah's generality is not incorporating every scenario in the Mishnah? That's very difficult. And that the only time that a person in the Mishnah would be chayv is only when he's walking it, but not when he's throwing it. But meanwhile, the generality is going on the case of throwing as well. So the Gemara says, so that also is very difficult. Okay, so a number of attempts to try to explain our Mishnah, Elam Arava Tarti Ketani. So finally, what the Gemara now has to do is, it has to break up the Mishnah. Meaning that we assumed up until this moment that the Mishnah was giving us one scenario. The Gemara now acknowledges the fact that it's not one scenario, but rather it's multiple scenarios. Really, the Mishnah over here is giving us 2 scenarios, and we have to break up the Mishnah. Hazorg v'nizkar me'achar shi'atzem yado. Let's start off with the first case of the Mishnah, where you throw an item, and after the item was released from your hand, but before it landed, you remember that today was Shabbos. Inami lo nizkar. Or let's say, for example, you didn't remember the kalta acher kalta kelav shenisrafa butter, but it didn't land in the intended area. It was intercepted, either by a person, by a dog, or it burnt in midair. In any of these scenarios, one would be putter. That is Rava's way of reading the Mishnah. And now, in Rava's way of reading the Mishnah, what we now have is a totally new way to look at the Mishnah, where it's not one long case. And then it really obviates our original issue. Our original issue is that the implication of the Mishnah would be, is that if it landed in its destination, you would be chayev. But of course, it remembered midair, and therefore you should be pater. Now that we see the cases of the Mishnah being 2 distinct cases, so we no longer have this implication, and now we're going to be fine. That's one way to read the Mishnah. Rav Ashi Amar Chisur Mechzer Rav Hachi Ketani. Rav Ashi says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go back to reading the Mishnah in our original presentation. However, there's a little bit missing in the Mishnah. And here what we're going to do is that we're going to insert into the Mishnah. And here's how we're going to read the Mishnah. Hazorg v'nizkar me'achar shi'atzem yado. You throw the item, and after the item left your hand, kalta acher or kalta kelev osha nisrafa. So, and after it left your hand, you remembered after it left your hand, and then it was caught by another person or by a dog or it burned midair. So in this scenario, pater, you would be exempt. Hanacha chayev. Now let's work with our implication. Our implication would be, is that if it landed, you would be chayev. Ba'med var mamorim, shechazer v'shachach. So here's the part now that we're going to add into the Mishnah. And that is that the only time you're going to be chayev, meaning we're working with the implication. The implication is that had it landed, you'd be chayev. Now remember, the scenario is that when you threw it, you were a shogeg. Mid-air, you remembered it was Shabbos. And the Mishnah scenario in which, if it landed, you would be chayev, is only talking about a scenario where there was another forgetting. There was another shechicha, another shogeg. And so, it was now, let's say, the case is complicated, admittedly. You threw the item, it was a shogeg. Mid-air, you remembered it was Shabbos. While it landed, you became a shogeg again. Now, we could certainly challenge this person's ability to retain a piece of information for an extended period of time. That is now two shifts of his mind while the item is in flight. So, totally understood that the scenario over here is highly unlikely. But the Gemara is really looking to draw out the principle over here. And that is that such an individual is in fact going to be eligible to be bringing a carbon chatas. Why? Because at the critical moments, meaning when the item left his hand, that is now going to be the akira. And when the item landed, that's the hanacha, at those critical moments, he's going to be a shogeg. The fact that mid-air he was not a shogeg and he remembered it was Shabbos is not going to affect or influence him bringing a karban chatas. He still will be eligible to bring a karban chatas because he was a shogeg at the critical moments of the akira and the hanacha. However, if he did not remember by the time, or I should say, if he did not re-forget, that's a strange word, but applicable over here. If he did not re-forget as the item had landed, meaning he remembered it was Shabbos mid-air, and that memory continued all the way to the end, so then he's going to be pater. He's not going to be eligible to bring a karmel chatos because he wasn't a shogeg from the beginning until the end. Okay, that is a way to read the Mishnah, albeit an extraordinarily complicated way to read the Mishnah, and we're really adding to the Mishnah that which doesn't exist. I'll share with you quickly an interesting Tosfos over here. Tosfos over here, on when Rav Ashi introduced his answer, so he opened up with Chesura Mechsura. We see Chesura Mechsura throughout the Gemara. Whenever there's a difficult Mishnah and we're going to struggle to read the Mishnah, and what we're going to be doing is adding in the Mishnah, so the Gemara always opens up with the words Chesura Mechsura, which literally means that the Mishnah is missing something, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to add to the Mishnah. There is a classic question that comes up every time you see the words Chesura Mechsura, and that is that is the Gemara actually suggesting that what we need to do is edit the Mishnah? And when the Gemara says that the Mishnah is missing, Chesura Mechsura, does it mean that it's actually deficient in words, and we're looking here to edit the Mishnah? Or Chesura Mechsura just simply means that we're not editing the Mishnah, we're not interested in changing a single word of the Mishnah. It's just that in terms of understanding, there are a couple of holes that need to be filled in, but not in terms of words, not in terms of actual editing, just simply that this is the right way to understand it. We're filling in understanding, but we're not going to actually fill in words. Tosfos over here writes, Rav Ashi Amar Chesura Mechsura, Ein ze mamash Chesura Mechsura, de Mishnah. Kamo shehi shnuya, yesh lafarish kein, so what Rav Ashi is over here saying, says Tosfos, is that this is not going to follow your standard Chesura Mechsura. We're just over here adding a layer of understanding, but this doesn't follow the general pattern of Chesura Mechsura. It certainly sounds like from Tosfos that in general, when the Gemara invokes the idea of Chesura Mechsura, what the Gemara means by that is that we're actually looking to edit the Mishnah. It's a difficult Tosfos because every time we have Chesura Mechsura, the Gemara never goes back and actually edits the Mishnah. It just simply says that this is what the missing parts of the Mishnah in order to complete our understanding. But certainly a simple reading of this Tosfos over here would indicate that in general Chesura Mechsura means that we're looking to actually add words into the Mishnah Over here, we're not looking to add words. We're just looking to add understanding. Halfway down on Kuf Beis Amud Aleph, Zehaklal Kol Chai V'Chatos, Itmar. The Gemara discusses the following scenario. Shei Amos B'Shogeg, Shei Amos B'Mezit, Shei Amos B'Shogeg. Okay? So now we're talking about a person having a very fluid memory. And the first two Amos that the item traversed, the person was in a state of Shogeg, not remembering that today was Shabbos. Next two Amos that the item traversed, he remembered that it was Shabbos. The next two Amos that the item traversed, he goes back to a state of being a Shogeg. Under those circumstances, what would be the halacha for such an individual? Would he be Chayv HaKarban Chatos or would he not be Chayv HaKarban Chatos? Okay. Rabba Amar Pata, Rabba Amar Chayev. So here we have what seems to be a debate between the Amoraim of Rabba and Rava. Rabba says he's exempt, Rava says he is Chayev. Now the Gemara over here is going to explain, and if I could just give away the Gemara that we're going to see in just a moment, there is no debate between Rabba and Rava over here. They're actually agreeing. It doesn't sound that way. But in other words, what they're describing is that there are two different circumstances that we could describe over here in our case of 2, 2, and 2, where you went a total of 6 Amos. And the case is where the first two are Shogeg, second two are Mezid, and the last two are going to be back to Shogeg. And yes, Rav is right that the individual is Pater, and Rava is right that the individual is Chayev. It just happens to be in two different circumstances, and we're going to see this now in the Gemara. Rav Amar Pater Afilo Rabbi Gamliel. Now, we're going to see the Shita of Rabbi Gamliel. We already alluded to it earlier in the Masechta, but we're going to see it in more detail in a couple of days from now. And that is that the Shita of Rabbi Gamliel is that there is no Yediyah breaking up a Malacha midway through the Malacha. Let's go over the classic scenario of Ksiva, of writing. In order to violate the Malacha of Kosev, you have to write two letters. Let's say you write your first letter in a state of Shogeg, and then you remember it was Shabbos. You then went back into your state of Halama, and then you wrote your second letter. Now, we know, generally speaking, that in order to be Chayv HaKarban Chatos, you have to have a Halama, you have to be in a state of Halama from beginning to end, as we already established. We also know that, generally speaking, that if you have a Yediyah in the middle, it breaks up the Malachos. However, if you had a Yediyah, but the Yediyah only broke up half of the Malacha, Rabbi Gamliel is of the position that there is no Yediyah that's going to break up half a Malacha. So in the scenario where I wrote a letter, having forgotten it was Shabbos, remembered it was Shabbos, went back to my state of Halama, wrote my second letter, Rabbi Gamliel says, you're Chayv a Karban Chatos because ain Yediyah lechatzi shir. That's the sheet of Rabbi Gamliel. So the Gemara says that's true, but that's in general, but that wouldn't affect our case over here. So, Hasam hu dechi kagamar shiur b'shogeg kagamar. Because over there, when you concluded the act of writing two letters, you did so in a state of being a shogeg. Avahacha de b'mezid lo. So the Gemara says, but over here, when was the malacha completed? 4 amos, meaning the first two and the second two amos. That at that point in time, the malacha has been completed. So the Gemara says, so under those circumstances, where were you in terms of your mindset when the Malacha was completed? You were in a state of being amazed. That's why Rabbi Gamliel in general who says that there is no Yediyah for Chatzi Malacha, but over here, of course, he would disagree. He wouldn't subscribe to his viewpoint in our scenario, because in our scenario, you have completed the Malacha in a state of being amazed. Now the Gemara over here goes on to explain even better. Uvamai. Iba Zorik Shogeg Hu. Now, are we talking about Zrika? Well, let's think about it. By Zrika, what are the critical moments when the item left his hand? And at that point in time, he was a Shogeg. And the fact that he had to change when mid-air is inconsequential because once it left his hand, you no longer have control over the item. So, Elabim Ma'avir. So, we're talking about a case of where you walked the item. And so, now we understand that in the case where you walked the item, first two Amos, you were a Shogeg. Second two Amos, you were amazed. Third two Amos, you were a Shogeg. But over here, if you're walking the item, you're going to be Chayv. Why? Sorry. If you walk the item, you're going to be Pater. Why? Because the first two were Shogeg. The second two were amazed. And at the conclusion of the second two, that's when you violate the Malacha. And at that point in time, you were amazed. That is Rabba's scenario of being pater. Now let's go to. Ella b'mavir. Okay, fine. Now Rabba Amar Chayev, right? In our Gemara we have the word Rabba, so it needs to be edited. So Rabba Amar Chayev. So Rabba says that you would be Chayev. What's the scenario? Now, even if I subscribe to the Chachamim Shir who says that a Yediya halfway through a Malacha is going to break up the Malacha, so that you're not going to be Chayev Karban Chatas. So Hasam Hu to be Yado. That's because when you're writing two letters, obviously it's totally within your control to write the first letter and to write the second letter. But over here, the in biyado, where it's not in your control, lo. Uva Mayna, the Gemara says, now clarification over here. What does that mean, it's not in your control midway through? Iba mavir hare biyado. Well, if you're walking the item, you could stop at any point in time. That obviously is in your control. The ela bizarek. So it's talking about a case of zrika when you're throwing the item. So when you throw the item, because at the time that it left your hand, you were in a state of shogeg, so at that point in time, the act now qualifies as an act of shogeg. Mid-flight, the second two amas you remembered, and it was amazing. The third two amas, you're back to being a shogeg. All that becomes inconsequential when you throw the item. Because when you throw the item, at the time that it leaves your hand is the most critical moment in time. Because after that point in time, you cannot stop its flight. Right? Rashi says at this point in time, it's a shogeg. Rashi, third line down. So now in terms of the fact that you had a machshava of mazid mid-flight is going to be inconsequential because the critical moments is when the item left your hand and when the item landed. When the item left your hand, you were a shogeg. When the item landed, you then were again a shogeg. The fact that mid-flight you remembered, well, you couldn't influence or affect it mid-flight, so therefore that will be inconsequential to our discussion. To say all this a little bit easier, a little more succinctly, we're basically saying as follows. In the scenario of first two amas b'shogeg, second two amas b'mezid, third two amas shogeg, so here the difference is going to lie in whether you walked those six amas or whether you threw the item six amas. If I walked the item six amas, so under those circumstances, all is an agreement in that scenario, and likely as it may be, in that scenario, all is going to be in agreement that you're not eligible to bring a karban chatas. Why? Because at the conclusion of the malacha, which is at the end of the second two amos, you were in a state of mazid. And therefore, you simply are not, you don't qualify for the karban chatas because you were not in a state of shogeg from the beginning of the malacha to the end of the malacha. If you threw the item, then you are going to be chayav karban chatas. Why? Because at the critical moments of the release from your hand and the item landing, you were in a state of shogeg. The fact that mid-flight you remembered is inconsequential because you cannot affect the flight path after it left your hand. Finishing up the first amud today, Amar Rabba, Zark v'nacha b'pi akelva b'pi akivshan, chayav. You throw an item and it is caught by a dog or it goes into a furnace and is burnt before it lands. So you're going to be chayiv. Now that obviously is difficult because v'anan tanan kalta acher kalta kelev ha-shenisrafa pater. Our Mishnah taught us that if it was intercepted and caught by somebody else or by a dog or if it burned midair, you're pater. How can Rabba say something that goes diametrically opposed to our Mishnah? Hasam gala mechavein. Hacha deka mechavein. So the Gemara's answer is very simple. If I'm throwing it with the intention of it landing in the furnace, with the intention of it landing in the mouth of a dog, so then one is going to be chayav. Our Mishnah is talking about a scenario where that wasn't your intention. It was intercepted by the dog. It burnt in midair, and that wasn't what you wanted to happen. That's the difference between Rabba and our Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Bibar Bayafa Namitanina. He says, look, we have the Mishnah. We have a Mishnah that's going to support this as well. The Mishnah is increased. As we saw this Mishnah already numerous times. We get to review the Mishnah again. Yesh okel lachila achas v'chayv ala dalad chataos v'asham echad. A scenario in which one act can lead to a person having to bring four carbon chatoses and one carbon asham. Hatam shachal chela v'hu nosar minam mukdash miyam ha-kipurim. So the person who is in a state of tumah, who is eating the chalev of an animal, which also happens to be nosar, and it belongs to Hekdesh, and he does so on Yom Kippur. So for that action, he's going to bring four carbon chatzeses and one carbon asham. First, the carbon asham. Carbon asham is because he ate Hekdesh, he benefited from Hekdesh. And that is a violation of Me'ilah. And with the violation of Me'ilah, so a person who does so b'shogeg is going to have to make full restitution, plus add a chomesh, plus bring a carbon asham, an asham me'ilos. Now, as far as the four chatzeses are concerned, so the food that he ate was chalev, so that is an iser kares, which dam b'shogeg is a chayv to bring a carbon chatzes. Nosar also is an iser kares. In other words, it was carbon left beyond its allotted time, and so therefore, for the consumption of nosar, that's another carbon chatzes. Eating it on Yom Kippur also is a violation, which would have has with it an iser kares, and if dam b'shogeg has to bring a carbon chatzes. And a tamei eating carbon, a tamei person eating carbon, another iser kares. So those are four iser kares where, if done b'shogeg, you bring a carbon chatzes. Those are the four carbon chatzes that are brought, and the asher me'ila, that would maximize the number of carbonos that a person could bring from one action if that action was done b'shogeg. Rabbi Meir Omer af im ha'isa shabbos v'otzio b'fiv chayev. And Rabbi Meir says, you know what? Let's be creative. We can add another scenario. Another carbon, and that is that while eating it, he's going to be, and it's Shabbos, he's eating it and carrying it in his mouth, and he's going to be chayiv. So, Amar lo einu min Hashem. And the Chacham say to Remeir, we applaud your creativity, but it doesn't fit into our construct. Because over here, what we're looking for is chiyuvim that are created based on consumption. And over here, it's true, you added a carbon chatas, but not for consumption, but for carrying the item in your mouth. That's a different category. It doesn't really fit into what we are looking to accomplish. Anyway, so the only debate at the end is whether or not we should add it to the list or don't add it to the list. But clearly, everyone's in agreement that one would be chayav for carrying the food in your mouth. Ve'amai ha'ein derech hotzah b'kach. So the Gemara says, now wait one second, carrying food in your mouth, does that really qualify as carrying? So the Gemara says, Ela kemen dekamechavim achshavoso mishavilei makom. Hachanami kemen dekamechavim achshavoso mishavilei makom. And the Gemara's response is that since that was your intention, so what you did is give chashiva, significance, to your mouth, so that is considered carrying. Similarly over here, if you're throwing an item with the intention that the dog catches the item in his mouth, so then that you've given chashivas to that makom, and therefore that is considered an hanacha. Okay, Hadron al-Chazorik, that is the end of the 11th parak of the Masechta. And this morning now, we literally turn the page. We're making now a major move in Masechta Shabbos, where we are now concluded with the malacha of Hotza'ah. After about 5 parakim, about 25 blot, the Gemara now moves on to discuss other malachas. Now, in terms of organization over here, as we begin the 12th parak of the Masechta, we're going to be discussing the malacha of binyan, of bona. That's going to be our first malacha that we're going to be discussing in detail. Go back to the Mishnah on Ayin Gimel, where the Mishnah introduced us to the 39 malachos, and it is certainly a curiosity in terms of what exactly is the order that the Mishnahites are taking us through. Because the malacha of Osa is the last malacha. Now, as we're going to take a somewhat deeper dive into the other malachas of Shabbos, so we are now going to go to Bona, and Bona is towards the end of the malachos, but it's kind of difficult to understand what exactly is the organization of the Mishnayos that we're now headed to Bona. You can, in fact, see this in the top Tosos on the Amud Beis. Tzarech litein tam amai tini Bona acher zrika v'otza. Got to give a reason why it is that we're discussing Bona now after discussing the malachas of Hotzah. And Tosos wonders, but Tosos here does not offer a suggestion, which obviously means that there is no readily available explanation in terms of why the Mishnayos did it. Tosos assumes that there is method behind Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in putting the malacha of Bona immediately after the malacha of Hotzah, but Tosos admits that he does not have a explanation readily available. But certainly it's a worthwhile endeavor to think about it. The Mishnah opens up, Abona kama yivne v'yechayv. Now in terms of the malacha of building, how much? What's the shear of building? Obviously we know that this is a major preoccupation of the Mishnayos, and to give a shear for every one of the malachas. for the Malach of Otsa, we spent an entire perek, the eighth perek of the Masechta, dedicated to Shiurim of Hotsa. So here now, as we open up with the 12th perek, so the first discussion is, what is the Shiur for Binyan? So the Gemara says, Habona Kol Shehu. So the Shiur is any amount. So this is one of those Malachas where there really isn't a Shiur. Any building that you do is going to qualify as a Malach of Bona, and one would be Chayev. There are, at least I can think of one other malacha for sure, that there's not going to be a shear, that's choresh. Interestingly, Rashi on the Mishnah, Ayin Gimel, going back to that Mishnah, so Rashi said that clearly by the malacha of choresh. Why Rashi only said that by choresh? Why didn't Rashi say that by binyan back on the Mishnah, Ayin Gimel? Perhaps that's a good question, but in the meantime, however, so the kol shehu, the any amount. And then the Mishnah goes through other activities which fall under the category of bona. Hamisases. The Mishnah gives the example of misases. Take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi describes, Marbeya es ha'evn matakna, hakol lefi hamakom. So Rashi says that what you're going to do is you're squaring out the stone, preparing the stone for building. And it really, Rashi says, it depends on where you live. Yesh mekam shirgiyam la'achlik, v'yesh mekam shirgiyam la'achrotz. But sometimes the stones, when they are square, they're squared and they're smoothed out. Sometimes there are ridges in them. And then Rashi points out, just an interesting historical note, here in Germany, Rashi, right? Rashi, France, Germany, at that point in time, it was all one and the same. It was called Ashkenaz. And Rashi says, here in Ashkenaz, our stones are actually grooved out. Okay. Anyway, so Hamasasis is squaring out the stone. And hamake bepatish, and putting in the final blow. Now, Rashi points out over here, this is an av malacha. Now, what does it mean, make bepatish? Rashi over here gives an interesting definition. Take a look at Rashi in the Mishnah. Rashi says, gam hu ba'avos ha-malachos v'hu ba'laz pik, okay, in old French, sha mefotzeitz bo es ha-evim min ha-sela la'achar she-chatzav es ha-evim saviv, u'mavdil min ha-har k'tzas, hu make bepatish make gedola, Vihi misrapekes v'nofelas. Vizel gemar malacha shel chotzvei evin. Rashi gives the example of, let's say, you're quarrying the stone. Basically removing the stone from the mountain. To the point where the stone is almost totally detached from the mountain. But with one connecting point between the stone and the mountain. But the stone basically is quarried. And what you're going to do now is give one final blow in order to remove the stone off the mountain. That's an example of Makeh Bepatish. But Rashi then goes on to say at the end, V'chol ha-gomer b'shabas malacha, tol ados Makeh Bepatishi. Anytime you're concluding an act that is going to file under this av malacha of Makeh Bepatish. Ham me'atzei, back to the Mishnah. And also, and somebody who is doing me'atzei, Rashi says that basically it is building, but building with metal. Rashi says, Afu kamo cornus gadol shel barzel, a big copper hammer, levinya shel barzel. And what you do with this is that you're building something that is made up of copper. So, hakodeach, drilling, says the Mishnah, kol shehu, any amount, chayev. One would be chayev ze'akla, kol ha'usa malacha malachto miskayemes, bishabis, chayev. Anyone who does a malacha, and the malacha is going to sustain, bishabis. Now, that word in the Mishnah, bishabis, seems to be misplaced. Now, when I say seems to be misplaced, Rashi actually says it is misplaced. Rashi says, A'osem malacha, kai. Rashi says that the word b'shabbos is going on osem malacha. And the way Rashi is reading the Mishnah is that when you do the malacha on Shabbos, and malachtum is kayemes, and the malacha lasts for a long time, so chayv one would be chayv. Rishim and Gamla Omer, Afa maka b'kornas al hasdan. Bishas malacha chayev mimneshu kimisakim malacha. Taking the hammer and striking the anvil while doing the malacha, you're going to be chayev because that is mitakim malacha. The Gemara, we'll save this for tomorrow because the Gemara in tomorrow's daf is going to explain what exactly a person is doing when taking the hammer and striking on the anvil. Why should that be considered a malacha? So the Gemara is going to discuss that tomorrow. Anyway, going back to that Rashi. So that's really interesting, because what Rashi is saying is that the word b'shabbos really is a misplaced modifier. It's actually going on ha'osa malacha b'shabbos. Now, I understand what Rashi's doing, meaning Rashi's really telling us that when the Mishnah says the word miskayemes, it's not miskayemes bishabbos, but rather miskayemes means that it has to have endurance. It has to last for a long time in order for the malacha to be considered a malacha, meaning that when you're building, it doesn't last for a significant amount of time. That doesn't qualify as a malacha. Now, it is strange because even as we take Rashi and we take Shabbos and we put it back on Ha'osa Malacha, what else would we have thought? Meaning we are now midway through the Masechta. Not exactly. In terms of pages, we're more than midway through. In terms of Prakim, we're almost midway through. Right, 24 Prakim in total, and we are right now in the 12th parak, so we're at the end of the first half of the Masechta in terms of Prakim. But at this point in time, it's clear that we're talking about these malachas being performed on Shabbos. We all understand that. And so why over here, the Mishnah says, Ha'osa malacha b'Shabbos, right? That's the way Rashi reads it. Well, what else would you possibly think? Of course we're doing the malachas on Shabbos. We're learning Masecha Shabbos. That's all we're discussing since the beginning of the Masecha up until this point in time. So it is, even as we're reading the Gemara the way Rashi is, reading the Mishnah the way Rashi is, it is certainly curious why it is the Mishnah has to articulate that we're doing this activity on Shabbos. Now, there would be an alternative reading of the Mishnah, and that is keeping the word Shabbos where it is. And if that's true, then the Mishnah is saying something really interesting. Ha'osa malacha umalachto miskayemes b'Shabbos. That really what the word Shabbos is modifying is the word kiyum, meaning how long does it have to last in order to qualify as a malacha? It has to last for the duration of Shabbos. Meaning that maybe the word Shabbos over here is modifying how long is endurance. In order for something to be miskayem, it has to last for the entirety of Shabbos. But then, of course, that's really interesting. Rashi's not saying this. But then that's really interesting because then what we're really doing is limiting what kiyum means. Kiyum means that it only has to last for the remainder of Shabbos. That's not really long-lasting. That's not really endurance. It could be a way to read the Mishnah, but that's certainly not the way Rashi read it. Anyway, continuing now in the Gemara. We are towards the top of the Amud. We're starting with the Gemara. Kol Shehu Lamai. Now, we said that a Kol Shehu, any amount, would be a Malacha of Bona. The Gemara's question over here is very simple. Why should it be that the Shear is a Kol Shehu? Now, the answer is, before we get to the Gemara's answers, the answer is because when they were making the Mishkan, so there must have been an act of binyan that amounted to a kol shehu. And so what we are going to do now in the Gemara, three rounds of it, is that we're going to go through what exactly in the Mishkan was the malacha that was performed through binyan that really was a kol shehu. Because that obviously will set the precedent, that will set the model, that the malacha of bone will be a shear of a kol shehu. Kol shehu l'may chazia. So Amar Rav Yirmiyah shekein ani chofer gumal atzniya ba pruto sav. So the Gemara says that the poor person will make a small little hole in order to hide his money. Now, in the Mishkan, was there something similar to that? So Rav Yirmiyah says, yes. Shekein tofer yirios chofrin gumal atzniya ba machtehem. The women who were sewing the Mishkan, right, the two coverings, right? We described it just a couple of days ago in the daf. So when they were stitching it, so what would they do with their needles? They would dig a small little hole in order to keep their needles stored and safe, and that would be the malachas kol shehu. So Abaye says, no, kevan dimishatchei lav dehachi. You take your needles and you store them in the ground, and they're going to just simply rust over there. That's not what they did. El shekein ani oseh pitputei kira ketanu lishpos alaha kedera ketana. So he says that, what is this binyan kol shehu? So let's say you construct a tripod, a small little tripod. The poor people, so when they would cook, they would have these very small pots, and they would erect these very small tripods. So the Gemara says, Gabe Mishkan, Mevashli Siman, Lisvo Yiriya Shechasra Malachtan, Osim Pitputke Kira Ketana, Lishposala Yora Ketana. And back in the Mishkan, a similar matter, where let's say after dying, an entire swatch of the covering of the Mishkan, they realize, oh, you know what? We're missing a spot. So what we need is just a little bit of dye. So what they would do is they would take out these small pots and erect these small tripods in order to cook a little bit of dye. So the Gemara says, Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amar Ein Anias B'Makom Ashiras. Do you think that's how they operate in the Mishkan? Where they made just enough dye? So the Gemara says, that's not how they operated. Ein Anias B'Makom Ashiras. The Mishkan is an area of wealth. In other words, when it comes to the construction of the Mishkan, they did not spare and they were not looking in cost-cutting measures. When they made dye, they made plenty of dye. There would never be a scenario in which they would just have there would be a little bit lacking, because really what they were looking was to trim the fat and make sure that they were within an operating budget. That's not how they were regarding the construction of the Mishkan. Now it happens to be in many other places in Shas. So the Gemara says a Torah Chasan Am Mamonish Yisrael, that when it comes to the Torah is looking not to have us waste and expend a significant amount of money. So it is a bit of a balancing act, and that in general, Ator Chasan al Amamonim Shal Yisrael, but at the same time, however, when it comes to the construction of the Mishkan, Ein Anias B'Makom Ashiras. So basically, we're going to try again. Ela Shekein Balabai Sheyesh Lo Nekev B'Bir Asov V'Sosmot Dekav Asega B'Mishkan Shekein Ker Shenaf Labo Darna Matif L'Tocho Eiver V'Sosmot. So the Gemara finally goes now round three. In round three, let's say you're living in your house and you find a hole in the wall in your house. You're going to want to plug the wall in that hole. Rashi describes this is a house in which you are, which you're eating in which you're sleeping in. You're not going to want to have even a small unseemly hole in your house. Similarly, in the Mishkan, let's say one of the crushing, one of the beams, got infested with a worm. Remember, the beams were made out of wood. It was infested with a worm. So what you're going to do, what they did back then, is they filled up the hole, took some lead, and filled in that hole. So that's why when it comes to the binyan, afilu koshu, even any amount, would in fact be the malacha of bona. Okay, so what we have accomplished now is we just went three rounds in the Gemara going over what exactly was the activity in the Mishkan that involved the binyan koshu, where now the shear of binyan is going to be a binyan koshu. Amr Shmuel, continuing in the Gemara halfway down in the Amud. Hamitzadeh is the Evan Chaya. Let's say what you do is you set the stone. So by setting the stone, someone is going to be chayiv. Now what it sounds like is that no cement is needed. Just simply the setting of the stone is the malach avona. Now Mesa the Gemara says, I don't understand. We have a braisa. Echad nosin es evan, echad nosin es atid, hanosin es atid chayiv. If you set the stone, the first person sets the stone. The second person now puts in the cement. So now it is secured in the building. The one who put in the cement, so he's the one who's going to be chayiv. So clearly over here, the setting of the stone is insufficient to create a chiyuv. The Gemara says now, but there's another part of the braisa. Rabbi Yossi says, all you have to do is just simply put the stone on top of it, and the placement of the stone and the stone on top of it is going to be chayiv. So Ella, so the Gemara says, here's what we're going to do. What we're going to do is we're going to navigate now through Shmuel, the braisa, the Tanakhama, the braisa, and Rabbi Yossi. And we're going to say they're all right. Elu ve'elu. All three positions are correct. It's just a question of which row of the stones are we talking about. And over here we're going to be talking about a wall made up of three rows. Ela tlasa binyana have. There are three rows that we're describing over here. Tasa, the lowest row. Mitzia, the middle row. Ila, and the top row. Tasa by tzedude v'afra. Now in terms of the lowest row, so what we have to do is just, we have to, the most important thing is to make sure that the stone is even. And so over there, that's the setting of the stone. And that is what Shmuel was describing. That's Hamitzadeh Esa Evan. This is all, everything I'm explaining over here is Al-Pi Rashi. That is the setting of the stone on the bottom. There, you want to make sure that it is level. Because obviously, if the base row is not level, the rest of the rows are not going to be level and are not going to stand. So that is the most important part. So that is tzedude. Tzedude over here means to make sure that it is level. And that if necessary, that means that you're going to have to put a little bit of dirt underneath this area or that area in order to make sure that it's level. That's what Shmuel was describing that would therefore qualify as bona. Mitzia, the second row, the middle row, by namitina. Well, that's going to require cement in order to make sure that it's cemented into the row below it. Ila'a. Now the top row is just simply a placement, and that's all you need. And Rashi over here, funny, Rashi writes, and what if it falls down? So you just simply put it back up again. Right? Okay, and the it doesn't matter if it teeters just a little bit because it's the top row, and I guess you could put it back up again. Anyway, the okay, that is the explanation of Shmuel's statement in collaboration with the Braisa, in collaboration with Rav Yossi. It's just a question of which row we're describing. Hamisases. Now we go back to the Mishnah and we move on to misatet. Now, in the Mishnah, Rashi described it as being the squaring off of the stone, making it into a building material. Now, misatet from Shemai Mechayev. Now, why would you be chayev for misatet? Now, if you look back in the Mishnah, so admittedly, in the Mishnah, here's how the Mishnah presented the information. Go back to the first couple lines in the Mishnah. First, the Mishnah opened up with the word bona, which is the malacha binyan, obviously. Then the Mishnah gave us the example of Misaseis, and then the Mishnah says Makeh Bepatish. So Misaseis clearly is an activity, but under which Malacha does it file under? The one that came before it, or the one that comes after it? And here we have a debate in the amongst the Amoraim. Misaseis Mishamay Mechayev. Rav Amar Misham Boner, Shmuel Amar Misham Makeh Bepatish. So here Machlok is between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says it files under Bona, Shmuel says Makeh Bepatish. Now, if you make a hole in the chicken coop in order for air to come in and out, so now Rav Amar Mishum Boner, Shmuel Amar Mishum Makeh Bepatish. Again, a debate between Rav and Shmuel whether it falls under the malacha bona or Makeh Bepatish. Ayoshufta Bekupina Demara. Let's say you're attaching the metal blade to the handle in order to create a shovel. But not only that, but you screw it in. So now it is securely in place. Rav Amar Mishum Boner, Shmuel Amar Mishum Makeh Bepatish. And again, same debate, whether or not one violates the Malacha of Boner or one violates the Malacha of Makeh Bepatish. So, on these three activities, now, all three of these activities, you are putting the final touches on an item. You are either squaring off the stone, you are either putting a hole in the chicken coop where, prior to that, the chicken coop was obviously, it was certainly a building, but not really usable until the air holes are there so that an exhaust can be created. And finally, the case of the shovel, where you not only attach the blade to the wooden handle, but you're screwing it in. So in all of these scenarios, Rav consistently says this is a subcategory of the malacha of bona. Shmuel says in all these cases they are makeh bepatish. And so a machlokas, the Gemara is not going to resolve which of these positions are quote unquote correct. Elu ve'elu, I guess you would say. Obviously, we have to pass on like one of them. Why is it important to know, parenthetically, when the person is committing this act on Shabbos and you're issuing a warning? So we know that the hasra, that the warning has to be either the action that he's doing or which av malacha it files under. So now, Rav and Shmuel would be giving two different warnings in terms of which malacha is the person doing. It is certainly a violation of Shabbos. That's not up for debate. Just a question of which av malacha does it file under. Utzricha. Now the Gemara says that the fact that we give three different examples are all necessary. The first example where you're squaring off the stone, that's derech binyan. But if you're just making air holes for the chicken coop, I might have thought that that's not binyan, that's makeh bepatish, and he would have agreed with Shmuel. And even if we go to case number two, where Rav says making the holes is a act of bona, but okay, at least I understand. I'm allowing now the building to breathe. But if all you're doing is securing the blade into the handle, so that is a that's an act of binyan. So and if all I had was the third example of the shovel and the blade, I might have thought there Shmuel says that's makeh bepatish, because that's not binyan. But if I go to the case number two or case number one, where I am making holes for the chicken coop, or I am squaring off the stone, I might have thought that Shmuel would agree to Rav that that's a case of bona. Tzricha, that's why all these cases are, in fact, necessary, meaning that Rav's position throughout is that it's binyan, Shmuel's position throughout is that it is makeh bepatish. Okay, we'll pause over here, but let's quickly review. We covered two different topics this morning. On the Amud Aleph, we finished up the Malacha Votza'ah. On the Amud Beis, we started with the Malacha of Bona. On the Amud Aleph, we talked about the idea that in order to be Chayav on Shabbos, the beginning of the Malacha and the end of the Malacha has to be B'shogeg in order to qualify to bring a Karban Chatas. And then we spent our first part of this morning trying to navigate through the Mishnah. The Mishnah gave a complicated scenario. And the implication of that scenario also is misleading. And so what we attempted to do this morning is navigate through the first scenario of the Mishnah, either by breaking it up into two different scenarios, or Rav Ashi's method of reading into the case and giving actually more details into the first case of the Mishnah. Then we discussed a scenario in which you went two amas b'shogeg, two amas b'mezid, two amas b'shogeg, and the distinction is drawn between whether you're walking that or you're throwing it. If you're walking it, so then you're going to be exempt from being a karban chatos because at the end of the malacha, which is at the end of the second two, you were in a state of mezid, as opposed to where you threw it, where at the beginning at the end of the malacha, which is at the when it left your hand and when it landed, you were in a state of shogeg. And then finally, we talked about how a mouth of a dog or a mouth of a person is significant if that's what you intended the item to land. Because once you give it significance, you are machshivit, and therefore it is considered en hanacha. And finally, on the second half of today's daf, we started with the malacha of binyan. The Mishnah now in the 12th parak of the Masechta, which we began this morning, introduces us to the other malachas and discusses them. Why do we move to the malacha of bonet? Tosfos asks that question without giving an answer. And we discuss what would be examples of binyan. We talked about building a kol shehu, misase squaring off the stone, and makeh bepatish, ma'atzeid, working with metal instruments on metal material. As long as there is kiyum, so then you're going to be chayav. The last statement of the Mishnah of Shimon Gamliel, we're going to explain in tomorrow's daf. Why is the malacha of binyan a kol shehu? So the Gemara gave three different possible explanations of where in the Mishkan we found that they did a kol shehu. In terms of laying the stones on a wall, so what we also did this morning is went through the three rows of the stones, the lowest row, the middle row, and the upper row, and just depending on where, which row it's in, is going to affect how much needs to be done to the stone for it to qualify as building. For the lowest row, just simply balance and level. For the middle row, it has to be cemented in. And the upper row just simply has to be placed on top. And finally, this morning, we went through the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel regarding how to qualify the acts of squaring off the stone, the making holes in the chicken coop, and securing the blade to the wooden handle of a shovel. Are these subcategories of the malacha of bona, which is the shita of Rav, or are they subcategories of the malacha of makeh bepatish, that's the shita of Shmuel?